we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Daily Express.
The Ordnance Survey has been busy updating information on some of its more remote areas of coverage. Mapping experts were slightly baffled by the popularity of Gwiliwchaki as a place name. But they've tidied that one up now. Having carried out fresh surveys, they found out it's Welsh for beware of the dog.
Thanks to Joan Wade in Sale for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Andy Hamilton and Linda Smith. I'm facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Andy, you have the first question. Who is pledging to start the election campaign?
Oh, it was terminally depressing to wake up at the start of the new year and discover that it's the run-up to an election and we're going to have a new initiative every day, which will be wonderful, all paid for by these, presumably by these lovely contributors. Actually, I was thinking of conducting a social experiment, Simon. If I'm going to write you a cheque now for £2 million, all right? Now, I'm going to do that. I'll do it.
Yeah, fine.
I'll willingly do it. And I want to ask you, if I wrote you a cheque for £2 million, do you think I'd want anything in return? What do you reckon? Do you think I might, you know...
Well, I'd be happy to let you advertise cigarettes on the back of my jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it'd be reasonable to expect someone to want a little bit of something in return, but apparently not the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister maintains that people give him £2 million and don't want anything in return, which I think makes him mentally ill and not fit to run the country. Also, there's one called Mr. Bourne, isn't there? Well, the man is given a lot of money via offshore funds. So, at the moment for Labour, there is one Bourne every minute. There you are, Simon. £2 million, though.
A long time since you had a cheque out of that book, isn't it? All the perforations still... are filled up, yeah. Andy, with pocket fluff.
It's still got shillings and pence on it, though.
All right. What I liked about that thing, of all the tiny hypocrisies that we have to mention now, because in a couple of months, God, I sound like John Wayne, get all the way with it. Well, they began to do in 2 months' time when we won't be able to talk about the election. But of all the hypocrisies he started with, Blair said he was proud that millionaires wanted to give him money. What a lie. If he was proud, why do you have to get to him with a tire lever to find out who's given it or why they've given it?
It would be used for posters as well. Won't most people go on posters? I would like to know if there is a single person in this audience who has been sitting at the traffic lights, you know, they've made up their mind which way they're voting at the election, and they look at the poster and think, no, that's right, that catchy slogan. I was a fool. It's just money wasted, surely.
But I believe that the new Agriculture Minister, Lord Monsanto, will walk out of the room. Any time an important decision relating to GM crops is taken, he will leave the room. I believe that. Totally.
So, 870 points to Andy for that.
Yes, I've got a feeling it's not going to be their night tonight.
No. You get what you pay for, Linda, in life. That's what I've found over the years.
Linda, whose white Christmas led to an epiphany?
Oh, ah, yes. Ha-ha. Greg Dyke, isn't it? Greg
it
Dyke.
Is. Went a to a Christmas white
party.
Christmas.
Yeah, hideously white. He went to a party somewhere, Christmas, had a look round the room, BBC party managers, had a look round the room, thought, hello, what is wrong with this picture? Only one black person there. So he decided that... possibly the BBC. I know it's hard to believe, audience sitting here, looking at the Rainbow Nation, that is the News Quiz panel.
Well, I'm only hideously white because of the season. By about June, I shall be hideously pink. In fact, I went to that party, and if Greg had stayed around after about 2 hours, where they'd been shifting his cheap Sumatran gin, they all gradually became hideously pink and generally hideous. Why did he choose the word hideous? I mean, what is hideous about being white, as far as Dyke's concerned?
Was Jeremy Clarkson at the party? That might.
But it's not fair to say that everyone at the BBC is white, because, I mean, many of the very, very badly paid jobs are done by black people. You know, it's only the real high flyers and the people who run everything that are all white. And not very good at it.
Yes, but be fair, they wouldn't have a chance of doing the cleaning. The place would be filthy. Greg Dyke looking after something important like that.
It should be good if the executives did take over the cleaning, because it'd all be rescheduled, where instead of going to the toilet when you felt like it, you'd have to go on a Tuesday afternoon.
And you'd have a target.
Yeah.
Little pie charts for if you didn't meet the target, you know what?
The Director General of the BBC, Greg Dyke, noticed at a Christmas lunch for his managers that only one of the 80 people there was not white. 2 points to Linda. Jeremy, who wants British armed forces to be given their due?
This must be the very highly safe and nutritious depleted uranium, which neutrifies as it cleans, as it kills. There's all these ridiculous rumours that spread as fast as uranium dust on a light breeze, and all these scare stories which are started by irresponsible ex-servicemen dying of unexplained diseases who are flying in the face of the truth that we know, that the government has spelled out, that you can safely feed a DU shell burger to your daughter and she will come to no harm, except that bit by bit they're saying, well, actually, yeah, they're not really that good for you. And you should probably have a balanced diet as well as breathing uranium dust if you want to have a fighting chance of surviving for a couple of years. So they've now announced that they're going to have an inquiry, but they will exclude Iraq from the inquiry for the simple reason that a lot more DU was used there, which could mess up the results by proving that it causes disease. And all these scientists are saying, well, we have found no evidence. Well, bloody look for it. You're on the public payroll. Find the evidence. Talk to the people.
They didn't plan to go to war with them, of course, because the man on Newsnight, night before last, was saying these depleted uranium is only dangerous after the shells explode. Why do you keep them in the cart and never use them? They're perfectly all right. We have made this enormous mistake of firing these things. And I don't know, what is it depleted from? You're a scientist. What was it before?
It's a byproduct of nuclear technology, of nuclear power, I think. It's leftover scrapings and slops from the core floor, which are shoveled up and stuffed in it. Yeah, all the best bit. The bit that people don't eat because they think it looks horrible.
The crispy bits.
Yeah, they put them in the shell.
The Chernobyl little chef, you mean?
Yeah, and then they put it in the shell and they whack it off. And it kills loads of people and then spreads toxic dust all over a very, very
wide
area.
Nice to think that nothing's wasted, really.
But it's what happens when you book NATO for the gig, though. It has to be said. I mean, if you let NATO into your country, I mean, it's like inviting the changing rooms people in. Once they've got in there, the place is going to be a toxic dump forever, and I think you have to face that, really. See, Mark Latey, we paid his wages when he was BBC defence correspondent, and we would say, this bloke is just a mouthpiece for NATO. And the NATO suddenly thought, well, that's rather a good idea. And so they hired him, and he used to look so sad, and now he looks all happy. He was on Channel 4 News, and he used to look like this lonely figure talking about defence. And you knew that at the end of the report, he went back to his little bedsit surrounded with his Airfix toys and his magazines in which the enemies said, Arga her Himmel, as they fell. And now he's on Channel 4 News. He's so pleased. He's saying, we at NATO, that's we, NATO. That's because I got a job with them now, see? That's we. They're my friends. They are. They're NATO. I met Officer the other day. I did. And I've been to the bathroom. I have. Weirdo.
That's all because he used to nick your parking space, isn't it? Going back to what Alan was saying about, to be fair to the MOD, I think what they said was the shell is only dangerous if you fire it
at something hard.
Yeah. So as long as you fire it at, you know,
kids and stuff is all right.
Yeah. Bouncy castles, it can take them out and it doesn't harm anybody. Just don't aim it at a tank. It's not what it was designed for.
2 points.
Oh!
he has to clear that with me now.
Do you take plastic?
Alan, listen to this. I play the street light because there's no place I can go. Street light, it's the only life I know. Street light, and there's a thousand parts to play. Street light. Alan, who took issue with street crime?
Yeah, this is Jack Straw, who doesn't really understand how spinning in PR works. A man tried to sell him a copy of the Big Issue, and Jack said, I'll have that, and gave bloke a tenner and waited for £9 change. He thought the man, a tussle then ensued, and he ended up paying £2. But what's really upset Jack Straw is the fact that crime figures go up because everything is portable. And it's the nightmare of our times. Once we invent portable radios and cars and portable phones, portable means you can take them away. And, mobile phones would really be the size of grandfather clocks and be pulled by two horses. And then they wouldn't get nicked. But there's something like, it was 30 or 40,000 crimes last year of nickable stuff being nicked simply because school children had it in their pockets. And all the movable goods in the world are just moving between other people. I think I'll stop now because I've reached my last voice.
Oh, Alan, could you sing I Was Born Under a One-Piece Star? I preferred Jack Straw when he was the child catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Wasn't quite as scary as he is now.
Andy, why has the post office been consigned to the bin?
Oh, that's my answer. All these big companies that have been known by the same name, they realise that if people know what they're called, then people can complain to them. So they're now inventing obscure words which sort of look like, you know, badly remembered Greek or Latin, and the post office have decided to call themselves Consignia. I don't know what it's supposed to...
Sounds like cheap shower gel to me.
Yeah.
The mark of a man with £3 to spend on personal hygiene.
It's certainly... I think we can safely say that the name hasn't been a success so far, judging by the general reaction. Clearly, this is the trend, a sort of rebranding thing. So I think I'm going to call myself Ambrosia. For commercial purposes. And I don't understand, it's part of some huge identity crisis whereby nobody's allowed to know what anything is anymore. I mean, and British Steel is now called...
Chorus. We could be called Corin.
And what is Chorus? What is it supposed to be? What? The goddess of steel. Anyway, it's all pointless, because everyone will continue to call it the post office, won't they? They're not going to say, I queued for an hour at the Consignia.
Apparently it's so they can compete in the international market, because they said, well, we can't call ourselves the post office, say, in another country, because they've already got something called the post office. But that's sort of the point, really, isn't it? And then you have the post office, and you have the gas, and you have the electricity, but now it's all changed, and Pizza Hut ring you up and say, oh, do you want us to deliver your milk? And you think, no, I don't.
Also, surely the post is going to get slower. If your postman has to compete with a postman in Spain...
He's going to be abroad all the time.
He's going to be knackered. He's going to say, I'm sorry that package was 3 days late, and I'd have to do half of Madrid. It would just... just... And now I put poor Sergio out of a job, and... Serge.
The spokesman explained the name Consignia describes the full scope of the work we do in the way that the words post and office do not. Changing names is the latest craze among giant corporations. Scottish Telecoms, it's true, has recently changed its name to Thus, which of course is Scottish for this. Jeremy, which former Oxford fellow will soon be one British school teacher who doesn't get any more rises?
Mr. T.
I know.
Mr. T?
We know Mr. T, yes.
From the 80s.
Well, he's now Miss T. Yes, he's not the 20-stone black wrestler covered in gold chains, but he's...
He was
a maths teacher at Charterhouse.
Was he?
And he's now going to live as a woman. I don't think he's had the operation, because the matron wasn't quite up to it. So it's a limit to what you can do with two spoons, a bit of elastoplast. But... No, I mean, come on, it's a serious story. And the bloke's had a tough life. He's going to be less tough as a non-bloke.
You said he felt like a woman trapped in a man's body, which must have been horrible, because I was once a woman trapped in a changing room at Selfridges, and that made me quite panicky.
I've been trapped in a woman's body. It wasn't that bad.
Alan, could you sing Barry White's Love Unlimited?
You could be the love walrus of Cricklewood.
Nicholas Tee, a former Oxford rowing blue and Charterhouse science teacher, has just announced his decision to have a sex change. He said he was just trying to move with the times. In modern education, nobody takes a packed lunchbox to school anymore. Alan, why is the government worried the 2001 census won't get through the mail?
This is the young again, who are not interested in filling up the census. And the only people who will fill up the census will be people like me, people with voices older than mine. And the structure of this country will be seen to start at about 47 up until death. And we'll never know how many young people there are. Except if we look out of the window and see how many mobile phones have disappeared from the street, then we will know nothing about youth. And the young are not interested in collaborating with the government.
I don't understand this story. Why don't young people want to fill out a census form? What is it? They can't be bothered.
Because it's so unfair.
You just don't understand, do you, Andy? I'm going to my room.
Officials are working on the first British census of the new millennium, fear it may be ignored by 20-something males, and are planning to put adverts in men's magazines and send text messages to their mobile phones.
You better answer it, Jeremy.
Which is yours?
Oh, Jeremy, that's what I call timing. Yeah.
Nobody ever rings mine. I'm amazed that that's happened. I mean, I try everything. I go to the theatre, I go to the cinema, I leave it on aeroplanes. No one phones.
There was an answer to that question, but I've forgotten what it was.
A friend in the audience question. Knew the answer, yeah. And rang me up.
The point was... Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Dumfries and Galloway Standard.
A 46-year-old man who committed a New Year disturbance has been fined £350. Richard Wiley of Dumfries pleaded guilty to hitting himself on the head with an ashtray.
What?
It's not an offence, that's an act. I'd pay to see that.
Thanks to Gene Clayworth of Sanker for that one. Listen, Andy, listen.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by and be.
Guess, Andy. Guess. Guess the question.
Guess the question?
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Andy baffled. Look, Andy baffled.
Ah, is it Janet and... It's Janet and John. Jesus. They've updated Janet and John books. And now they're much more modern. It's like Janet and John download some porn and stuff like that. I don't remember reading Janet and John. The first book I remember reading was Chicken Licking, which had a marked effect on me. It was about a chicken who believes the sky is going to...
That's Henny Penny.
Well, but Chicken Licking goes around thinking the sky is going to fall in. I'm sure she
Henny
does.
Henny Penny's the lead character in it.
Well, she's the troublemaker who starts it. But I went... That had a marked effect on me. I was very cautious and as a child. I worried a lot. And I remember reading that and going outside, looking at the sky and think, there's nothing holding it up, actually, strictly speaking. Wore hard hat for days. But anyway, yeah, they've updated Janet and John.
So as a child, you shared the fears of a fictional chicken.
Yes, I did. And it's what made me the man I am today. I still can't really walk past the butcher's very easily. If there's chicken in the windows, I still have a glance upwards.
It's the return of Janet and John with a new up-to-date, ethnically diverse image. Educationalists have attacked Janet and John's heavy emphasis on mindless repetition, a lesson which BBC's schedulers have sadly yet to learn. Linda. Sven is a new boss taking over. It's a tricky one, isn't it?
Oh, that's really tricky. Because it's football, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the new coach, the New England coach, called Sven... Is it Goran?
Goran Eriksson.
It's a song, isn't it? Sven Goran Eriksson.
Well, it is now.
It's Danny Kaye, I think. In the film, he was Danny Kaye.
Yeah, I think he's a fairy tale.
And we were really lucky to snap him up as the England coach because he's done spectacularly well at Lazio, so well that they're letting him go early. So I imagine the FA were the same people who probably put their money into Betamax videos and 8-track cassettes because, yeah, the good news is he's available immediately. That's the one, isn't it?
The great thing is the curse of that job, because he was winning lots of games until he got made the England manager. And then he couldn't win anything after that. And I don't think it bodes well. I think even as we speak, there are Fleet Street editors sharpening vegetables ready for him. And he's a Swede. I mean, what a gift. What a gift. And he's got an assistant called Grip Tord. And, you know, I mean, that's just hours of fun for a headline writer, isn't it?
People get all upset about the fact we've got a foreign manager for England, but surely it's the fact that we've got English players that's going to be the real problem, isn't it? That's the thing we've got to iron out, really.
They're paving the way to that. Think, well, once we get the foreign manager, then they can say, well, look, the players don't understand him. We've got to have a few foreigners in to make it fair.
Eriksson is the first ever England manager for whom English is a foreign language. He takes over from Kevin Keegan, the 19th English manager for whom football was a foreign language. 2 points to Linda. Alan, what stony facade hid a moving story?
What stony facade?
Yeah.
Stony facade.
Alan, what stony facade hid a moving story?
We know, miss.
Well, give Jeremy a chance. Do you know this, Jeremy?
We don't know, but can we have the points anyway?
It'll cost you.
Is it the asteroid?
We laugh at your
There's
asteroid.
A big asteroid.
You poor fools.
Well, you wouldn't laugh if you had an asteroid like I have. I tell you, when this hits Earth, the dinosaurs will rule again. It's not the asteroid that looks like a face or something, no?
It's about a house move, is it?
No, it's not.
Dear, this is about Stonehenge.
Yes.
Stonehenge. Oh. Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen went and he moved all Stonehenge around. That's right, isn't it?
That's it, put in a pergola and a water feature, a bit of gravel.
The Stonehenge we see today is not what the Druids meant.
Not at all.
No.
It wasn't the original conception at all.
No, it was actually just a pile of rubbish that the Druids chucked out.
Well, it was the equivalent of the Druid Dome. They had their first millennium celebrations there. They hadn't gone too well, to be honest. They were a bit rubbish. And they left it to go to rack and ruin.
Long queues. They left it so it was just a higgledy-piggledy pile of stones. And then a few historians came along and said, oh, we know what they meant. They meant to put it up in this strange formation that looks like sort of lots of goalposts in a circle. And that's the Stonehenge we see today. It's a lie.
What, they're supposed to just toss them aside in a cavalier fashion and they landed in that way?
Yeah, basically, they're big blokes, the Druids. They used to walk around with very large Welsh stone in their pockets and everything. Yeah, I think that's right.
That's the answer. You're going to give him a point. Yeah. Even if it's true, it shouldn't be.
It had the word stone in the clue. There's no need to look so aggrieved, you two. I think it had the word stone and moving around, didn't it? I mean, me and Linda, we're not being judgmental or anything, but, you know, you were pretty thick not to get it.
This is one of the wonders of the ancient world. Next they're going to say, oh, the pyramids, they're just some Toblerone with sand covering them.
Stonehenge was restored in fits and starts over a period of 60 years between 1901.